one of his more recent books on Israel and Palestine, Gaza in Crisis, written with Professor Ilan Pape, he doesn't stop. And Manufacturing Consent, which taught us so much about how the media manufactures consent for war. The New York Times described Noam Chomsky as arguably the most important intellectual alive today, to which Professor Chomsky responded, "What did I do wrong?" That is his power, his humor, his compassion, and his passionate struggle to ensure that people have information about the reality on the ground today, talking about what's happening in Israel and Palestine. Professor Noam Chomsky.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here to be able to talk with you and discuss with you afterwards. Many of the world's problems are so intractable that it's hard to think of ways even to take steps towards mitigating them. The Israel-Palestine conflict is not one of these. On the contrary, the general outlines of a diplomatic solution have been clear for at least 40 years. Not the end of the road, nothing ever is, but a significant step forward. And the obstacles to a resolution are also quite clear. The basic outlines were presented here in a resolution brought to the UN Security Council in January 1976. It called for a two-state settlement on the internationally recognized border, and now I'm quoting, with guarantees for the rights of both states to exist in peace and security within secure and recognized borders. The resolution was brought by the three major Arab states, Egypt, Jordan, Syria, sometimes called the confrontation states. Israel refused to attend the session. The resolution was vetoed by the United States. A U.S. veto typically is a double veto. The resolution is not implemented, and the event is vetoed from history. So you have to look hard to find the record, but it is there. That has set the pattern that has continued since. The most recent U.S. veto was in February 2011, that's President Obama, when his administration vetoed a resolution calling for implementation of official U.S. policy, opposition to expansion of settlements, and it's worth bearing in mind that expansion of settlements is not really the issue, it's the settlements, unquestionably illegal along with the infrastructure projects supporting them. For a long time, there has been an overwhelming international consensus in support of a settlement along these general lines. The pattern that was set in January 1976 continues to the present. Israel rejects a settlement of these terms and for many years has been devoting extensive resources to ensuring that it will not be implemented with the unremitting and decisive support of the United States. Military, economic, diplomatic, and indeed ideological, by establishing how the conflict is viewed and interpreted in the United States and within its broad sphere of influence. There's no time here to review the record, but its general character is revealed by a look at what has happened in Gaza in the past decade, carrying forward a long history of earlier crimes. Last August, August 26th, a ceasefire was reached between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. And the question on all our minds is, what are the prospects for the future? Well, one reasonable way to try to answer that question is to look at the record. And here, too, there is a definite pattern. A ceasefire is reached, Israel disregards it, and continues its steady assault on Gaza, including continued siege, intermittent acts of violence, more settlement and development projects, often violence in the West Bank. Hamas observes the ceasefire, as Israel officially recognizes, until some Israeli escalation elicits a Hamas response, which leads to another exercise of mowing the lawn in Israeli parlance, each episode more fierce and destructive than the last. The first of the series was the agreement on movement and access in November 2005. I'll give a close paraphrase of it. It called for a crossing between Gaza and Egypt at Rafah for the export of goods and the transit of people, continuous operation of crossings between Israel and Gaza for the import and export of goods and the transit of people, reduction of obstacles to movement within the West Bank, bus and truck convoys between the West Bank and Gaza, the building of a seaport in Gaza, the reopening of the airport in Gaza that Israel had recently destroyed. These are essentially the terms of successive ceasefires, including the one just reached a few weeks ago. The timing of the November 2005 agreement is significant. This was the moment of Israel's disengagement, as it's called, from Gaza, the removal of several thousand Israeli settlers from Gaza. This is depicted as a noble effort to seek peace and development, but the reality is rather different. The reality was described very quickly by the Israeli official who was in charge of negotiating and implementing the ceasefire, Dov Weisglas, close confidant of then Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. As he explained to the Israeli press, the goal of the disengagement, I'm quoting him, was the freezing of the peace process so as to prevent the establishment of a Palestinian state and to ensure that diplomacy has been removed indefinitely from our agenda. The reality on the ground is described by Israel's leading specialists on the occupation, historian, respected historian Idit Zertal, Israel's leading diplomatic correspondent, Akiva Eldar, wrote the major book, the standard work on the settlement project called Lords of the Land, referring to the settlers. What they say about the disengagement is this. They say the ruined territory, and by then it was ruined, largely part of the reason for the removal of the settlers, the ruined territory was not released for even a single day from Israel's military grip or from the price of the occupation that the inhabitants pay every day. After the disengagement, Israel left behind scorched earth, devastated services, and people with neither a present nor a future. The settlements were destroyed in an ungenerous move by an unenlightened occupier, which in fact continues to control the territory and to kill and harass its inhabitants by means of its formidable military might. That's an accurate description from the most respected Israeli source. The Oslo Accords 20 years ago established that Gaza and the West Bank are an indivisible territorial unity whose integrity cannot be broken up. For 20 years, the United States and Israel have been dedicated to separate Gaza and the West Bank in violation of the accords that they had accepted. And a look at the map explains why. Gaza offers the only access to the outside world of Palestine. If Gaza is separated from the West Bank, whatever autonomy might ultimately be granted in the West Bank would be imprisoned. Israel on one side, a hostile Jordan, ally of Israel on the other side, and in addition, one of Israel's slow and steady U.S.-backed policies is to take over the Jordan Valley, about a third of the West Bank, much of the arable land, which would essentially imprison the rest even more tightly if Gaza is separated from the West Bank. Now, that's the major geostrategic reason for the Israeli insistence, with U.S. backing, on separating the two in violation of the Oslo agreements and the series of ceasefires that have been reached since November 2005. Well, the November 2005 agreement lasted for a few weeks. In January 2006, a very important event took place, the first full free election in the Arab world, carefully monitored, recognized to be free and fair. It had one flaw, came out the wrong way. Hamas won the parliament, control of the parliament. U.S. and Israel didn't want that. You may recall, at that period, the slogan on everyone's lips was democracy promotion. The highest U.S. commitment in the world was democracy promotion. Here was a good test. Democracy. Election came out the wrong way. The U.S. instantly decided, along with Israel, to punish the Palestinians for the crime of voting the wrong way. A harsh siege was instituted, other punishments, violence increased. The United States immediately began to organize a military coup to overthrow the unacceptable government. That's quite familiar practice. I won't go through the record. The European Union, to its shame and discredit, went along with this. There was an immediate Israeli escalation. That was the end of the November agreement, followed by major Israeli onslaughts. In 2007, a year later, Hamas committed even a greater crime than winning a fair election. It preempted the planned military coup and took over the Gaza. That's described in the West, in the United States, most of the West, as Hamas's taking over Gaza by force, which is not false, but something is omitted. Now, the force was preempting a planned military coup to overthrow the elected government. Now, that was a